Chapter 18. Cadmus. Bindings. Renewed. Ahriman sat opposite the great king. He blinked away a shimmer of ether fire haloing the man's head, and moved his mind into the fourth enumeration as he studied his face. The man's bone structure was unusual, which was to be expected from a face millennia distant from his own. The king's olive skin was smooth, his dark hair neatly trimmed and his beard freshly oiled. He was the very image of King Cadmus. Yet it was the eyes that revealed the truth. The light of wheeling galaxies danced in the depths of each iris, the gleam of vast knowledge that could never be entirely obscured. Power clung to this mortal disguise, locked away behind a will of iron, but there nonetheless.
"Do you like my library?" asked King Cadmus. "I have nearly 10,000 books gathered from all across the empire. There are works of all the great scholars of Thebes and Samothrace, and even a scholarly work from Sparta, if you can believe that. One is even bound in the hide of the dragon I slew at the Isthmian spring."
"A dragon?"
"A fierce beast indeed," said the king, placing a long serpent-carved hecastaff on the table. "It killed a great many of my people before I was able to bring it down and sow its teeth."
"The birth of the Spartui,"
said Ahriman, intrigued despite the sudden appearance of a staff from thin air.
"But slaying the beast was a deed I would come to rue."
"How so?"
asked Ahriman, knowing he could not indulge his father's delusion for much longer.
"Unbeknownst to me, the serpent was sacred to Ares, and the war god cursed my rule with ill fortune, plagues, rebellions, and war."
"You were not the only one to sow the teeth of the dragon, were you?"
said Ahriman, baiting the trap.
"No. Iason, the centaur's stepson, took some with him from Thessaly and sowed them in Colchis."
The king's eyes flickered at his careless mention of that ancient place. Its namesake was a similarly blighted place, where dark mutterings of gods and cults had twisted a brother once dear to Magnus. Ahriman leaned forwards and placed his hands palms down on the table. He stared into the king's eyes, seeking to appeal to his gene-sire lurking behind them.
"Father, it is time to come home," he said.
"I am home," said Cadmus. "This is where I belong, cataloguing my books and making sure I memorize every one. If I can commit one book to memory every day, then it will only take a little under 30 years to read them all."
His words trailed off. "But each time I finish one, 3 more appear. It is most confusing. There is so much to learn, so much to know. My greatest fear is that I will not live to know them all."
"You said something similar within the Obsidian Tower," said Ahriman.
"The Obsidian Tower? Is that in Phoenicia?"
"No. It is your sanctum upon the planet of the sorcerers."
The king's features darkened, and he opened his book once again. How long could Magnus maintain this cognitive dissonance? How long before this facade cracked and the colossal power behind the mask was revealed? What fury might be unleashed when this fantasy became unsustainable? As dangerous as it might be, Ahriman knew he had to irrevocably shatter his father's fiction.
"Now you are trying to confuse me,"
said the king, staring intently at the pages of his book, his hands curling into fists.
"I know of no such place. You should go now, I think."
"I'm not leaving here without you, father,"
said Ahriman.
"Mistress Shivani warned me you would seek to make me your prisoner,"
said Cadmus, scanning the pages of the book.
"I told her she was wrong. I told her my sons would only come as fellow seekers after knowledge."
Ahriman hid his excitement at the king's acknowledgement of him as one of his sons. He reached across the table and placed his hand atop the book the king was reading.
"We do not have long, father. The past is obdurate and does not tolerate things that ought not to be here. If you stay, you will become a formless ghost. I beg you, come with me. I can make you whole again."
The king shook his head, fear and anger warring on his features. Ahriman drew back his hand as he saw the latter emotion gain the ascendancy.
"I should have listened to Mistress Shivani,"
said King Cadmus. She told me to kill you as soon as I saw you. The ancient king rose from the table and swept up his staff, its length shimmering as it filled with ether power. His form expanded as the demigod within shed its illusory refuge in scraps of disintegrating mist. Olive skin darkened to ruddy crimson, and hair grew wild as his eyes swelled to become one great orb that swam with colours known and unseen. The shard of Magnus stood revealed, robed as the peerless scholar Ahriman remembered from their many sojourns in the towering libraries of Tisca. Though a fragment of a much greater whole, this Magnus could still destroy them all. He had a momentary sense of ether build-up before a wave of pure force erupted from the Primarch. It hurled the three of them back against the bookshelves. Timber splintered under the impact, and books fell in a rain of parchment and worn leather. Tolbeck was first to his feet, his aura blazing with the instinctive urge to strike back. Flames built at his fists.
"Stop!" commanded Ahriman. "We are not here to fight!"
Hathelmart plunged the air around Tolbeck's fire to sub-zero levels, and the flames died instantly. The Pyrrhi adept rounded on him, but the gleaming serpent wound staff of his genesire flashed into the space between them. The three legionaries faced their Primarch, awed by the sheer majesty of his being. This was their Primarch as they wished him to be, aglow with knowledge and the wisdom to wield it, vibrant, energized, and sure of purpose.
"My lord," said Ahriman, dropping to one knee.
The others followed his example.
"We are your sons, and we are here to help."
"I do not need your help," said Magnus, lowering his staff.
"But we need yours," said Ahriman. "The Legion is dying, just as you are dying."
"You are wrong," said Magnus.
"No," said Ahriman. "Without us, you will fade until nothing remains, and without our father, we will wither on the vine, doomed to madness and mutation."
"If that is true, then I can do nothing to change that fate. Nobody can."
"I refuse to accept that," said Ahriman, rising slowly to his feet. "You are Magnus the Red. You are the Crimson King, master of Prospero, and the greatest mind the galaxy has ever known. There is nothing beyond your reach."
The Primarch shook his head.
"I once thought as you do, my son," he said. "I believed I knew everything, that I was more enlightened than any of my brothers, more visionary than even my father. How foolish that now seems, how arrogant. There is always more to know, more to learn, and every act of learning must come with the humility to know that however much is learned, it is never enough."
"Is that why you remain here, hiding in an ancient library like a coward?"
"Do you seek to anger me, Azek? Would that help?"
"No," said Magnus,
turning and walking around the edge of the library, running his fingers over the spines of the priceless texts.
"This aspect of me is beyond anger, beyond jealousy and bitterness. It is the part of me that seeks knowledge simply for the sake of its acquisition. It is the part of me that felt your discord as you drew near and sought to heal the rifts between you. I hoped it would allow you to avoid the fates awaiting you at one another's hands."
At least Ahriman now knew from whence had come the gift of brotherhood in the passage through the mountain. He stepped towards Magnus.
"It is that aspect of my father we need most. The portion of your psyche that remains on the planet of the sorcerers is breaking apart. He feels the great geometries of his mind unraveling with every passing breath. He acts as you do, trying to remember all that was lost on Prospero. But it is impossible in his splintered state. Only when you are made whole again can we be restored."
"I am sorry, Azek," said Magnus, turning to face him once more. "But I cannot return. All I see on that path is an eternity of war and horror, death and torment. It is inevitable that all great things must end, so why fight it?"
Ahriman slammed his fist down on the table.
"Because some things are worth fighting for," he cried. "The end may come, yes, but we will not allow the galaxy to fall to ignorance without a struggle. We will rage at the death of reason sweeping humanity and hold fast to the lone torch of illumination as darkness closes in. It may be extinguished. It may be torn down by the baying idiot mob. But at least we will have kept it aloft and alight as long as possible. Can you say the same, Father? Hiding alone in a library that will soon be burned to ash?
Ahriman paused as he saw his father's look of shock.
Yes, this mountain and all within it will soon be ash. You don't remember?
No, said Magnus. I do not.
Ahriman nodded and stepped around the circular table.
Soon these mountains will be ablaze from the archipelago towers of the Aegean Valley to the Gulf of Lepanto. Nothing will remain of the great king's works, but you will endure. You will remain alone in the darkness below Mount Kithaeron with nothing but dust and cinders pouring through your fingers until your spirit is naught but breath on the wind.
Magnus circled in opposition to him, and it broke Ahriman's heart to see his father so distraught. His father turned to look at the books stacked on the walls, reaching for them, as, one by one, they began to fade, like echoes receding into the past.
I can't hold on to them, said Magnus, sinking to his knees as a tear ran down his bronzed cheek. I can feel them fading, like old friends walking away into a fog.
Ahriman reached his father and placed a hand upon his shoulder, feeling the profound grief racking his immaterial body. To feel every aspect of your soul peeling away layer by layer, memory by memory, that was a new death every day. He held his Hecastaff out to Magnus.
Come back with me, father, he said.
Magnus nodded and gripped the ebony staff.
You will bring me back to what I was?
He asked.
I will, promised Ahriman. Then I will come with you.
And the soul shard of Magnus poured into Ahriman. Ahriman opened his eyes and gasped to see the world as he had never seen it before. He stood once again in the halls of extinction, on the banks of the flowing dark river. Its waters were aflame with coruscating temporal energies that burned like the deepest cold of the void. He stumbled away from the water's edge and would have fallen but for the steadying arm of Hathor Mart. Ahriman flinched at the contact, seeing a momentary flash like twin comets of light blazing from the warrior. Ahriman heard voices, muted, idiot things. He felt bodies in motion around him, slow-moving sacks of witless meat and bone encased in brittle skin shells that could be so easily unmade. He lurched away from their abrasive voices, weaving and stumbling like a drunk, blinking away after-images of existences spent at 1,000 times the speed of life. The power filling him was magnificent and unimaginable. Ahriman saw all the sharp edges of the world. Everything was too clear, too bright, and too real for him to process. He saw 1,000,000 details in every glance, the ever-diminishing fractal edges of the rocks, iridescent rainbows within the spray of water droplets, music in the black river of future, past, and present.
I can see everything, gasped Ahriman. I feel it.
The sensory overload was too much. He fled, as if he could somehow outrun the barrage of noise and light. His mind buckled under the weight of so much input. The fragile synaptic network within his meat brain was incapable of enduring this unending torrent of information.
I will spare you this burden, my son, said the voice of his sire in his skull.
Father, is this how you see the world?
Asked Ahriman.
A measure of it.
How can you stand it? How can anyone contain such power without letting it control them?
You want to know why, if I had such power, would I not wield it?
Yes,
Ahriman gasped.
Godly power is at my fingertips every day. The ability to create and destroy in the same breath, to own such singular power and not use it, is the greatest strength of all.
I do not have your strength, said Ahriman.
My mind's architecture is not yours, agreed Magnus,
his voice already fading to a ghostly whisper.
My sons were never meant to see as I do. If you will let me, I will take what was not meant for you to see.
Yes,
begged Ahriman.
Take it. Take it from me, please.
Instantly, the onslaught faded, and Ahriman let out a gasping, drowning man's breath. His chest heaved with the exertion of bearing a spirit far greater than his own, as comforting filters veiled his eyes from vistas not meant for mortals. Even as it was killing him, tears spilled down his face at the thought that this connection to his father was over.
"Ahriman,"
said a voice at his shoulder, and he recoiled at the ugliness of its sounds, the grunting bovine cadences of its vocalization. Even that began to fade, and a knife of grief stabbed into his heart at its loss. Ahriman felt the presence of Sanakt, Hathor Maat, and Tolbeck standing behind him. He tasted ash and metal as Aphogomon took a step towards him.
"Get away from me, demon,"
snapped Ahriman, looking around him. A grey fog smeared his vision, his eyes transitioning from seeing everything to almost nothing. All that was certain was that he was no longer in the library of King Cadmus.
"Where are we?"
he asked, his own voice no less ugly than that of his brother's.
"Back where we started," said Sanakt. "In the Hall of Extinction." "And the Reckoner?"
asked Ahriman. "Gone," answered Hathor Maat. "If he was ever truly here..." Ahriman forced himself to stand, using his Hecker staff for balance. He felt its power, and elation surged through him as he saw it was no longer ebon black, but ivory white. Every one of them could sense the power it contained.
"You succeeded,"
said Aphogomon with undisguised anticipation.
"The Shard of Magnus,"
said Hathor Maat, shaking his head in disbelief.
"Throne, we did it. We actually did it!"
"Yes,"
said Ahriman, feeling the inhuman potential of what he now bore.
"We did."
"It's about time something went right for us,"
snarled Tolbeck, turning back towards the entrance.
"Now let's get off this bloody rock and be on our way."
The gunship filled with the reek of blood and burned metal as the wounded Gyr Lothnir Hellblind flew the Stormbird through the atmosphere towards the Doramar. Its troop compartment bore the dead of the Mechanicum, the ruin of their mission, and also their prize. Sister Caesaria's life was pouring out of her, and Yasu Nagasena remained unconscious with a fist-sized swelling upon his right temple. Olgir Widdowson tended them as best he could, battling to stabilize bodies, the mortal workings of which he had only the most rudimentary knowledge. Promus could spare the wounded none of his attention. He and Budvar Bjarki fought a different battle. Bjarki pressed both his hands down on Lemuel Gaumon's right shoulder as the man thrashed beneath him. Promus held the Remembrancer's other shoulder, and both warriors required their entire weight to pin him down. Menkaura sat astride Lemuel, one hand holding his throat, the other cutting bloody runes into the skin of his bare chest with the tip of a combat dagger. Standing behind him was Svavnir Rackwolf, the muzzle of his bolt pistol pressed against the sorcerer's neck. With Sister Caesaria's life hanging in the balance, a bolt to the head was the only real threat they had.
"Hold him still, damn you!"
yelled Menkaura.
"The binding invocatus must be precise, or they will not hold."
The Remembrancer's body burned furnace hot and was slicked with sweat and blood. His ruddy skin squirmed with motion as the spirit Menkaura had trapped fought to free itself. The thing within Lemuel roared obscenities and chewed his lips to shredded meat. He spat blood in the wolf's face, laughing as he cursed his mother and father.
"The spirit of our enemy is bound,"
snarled Bjarki.
"Why are we not killing this thing?"
"Because we need him,"
shot back Menkaura. A growl built in Bjarki's throat.
"Why should I trust the word of a traitor?"
"Because I am the only reason you yet live,"
snapped Menkaura, as Lemuel bucked beneath them like a groxmare in heat. His lips drew back in a rictus grin, and bloodied spittle flew from his stretched mouth. Menkaura leaned in close and spoke unintelligibly profane words that scraped along Promus's spine like rusted razors.
"What in the All Father's name are you doing?"
yelled Bjarki.
"Saving us!"
retorted Menkaura.
"Let him work, Bjarki,"
said Promus through gritted teeth. It went against everything he had been taught to let Menkaure perform such an abominable ritual. But what choice did they have? What was one more sin to be added to his tally? Biaki bared his fangs, veins bulging at his neck and forehead. Fury blazed from him, and he glared at Promus as though he blamed him personally for the slaughter on the mountain.
"Listen to your friend!" snapped Menkaure, twisting the blade in Lemuel's chest and drawing an inhuman screech of anger from somewhere deep inside him. "Now be silent and let me finish this before the Soul Shard can escape! When this is done, I will kill you, sorcerer!"
promised Biaki.
"This is evil knowledge. It is Maleficarum. My evil knowledge will save us all!"
Biaki growled, shaking his head in disbelief.
"Oh, and you dare ask why the wolves were loosed?"
Promus saw Menkaure control his resentment only with the greatest effort. For the briefest second he almost admired the warrior's restraint.
"One day you will be glad of what I know,"
said Menkaure.
"That day will never come,"
said Biaki, as the sorcerer made a final cut in Lemuel's abdomen, and the man instantaneously went limp beneath them. A final breath, like the death rattle of a corpse, escaped his bloodied lips.
"Is it done?"
asked Promus. Menkaure nodded and reversed his grip on the combat knife, extending it towards him. Promus warily released Lemuel's shoulder and glanced over at Biaki. The space wolf nodded and snatched the knife from Menkora's hand. He rose swiftly and pulled Menkaure to his feet, pushing him up against the gunship's fuselage. He pressed the tip of the blade under the enemy legionary's jaw, ready to drive it up into his brain.
"Biaki!"
cried Promus.
"No! Give me one reason why I let him live." "I can help you find the other shards before my brother legionaries,"
said Menkaure. Biaki shook his head.
"You will betray us. The first chance you get, you will feed us to the wits of the Underverse."
"Well, then go ahead and kill me," said Menkaure.
"Please, you will be sparing me a life of endless sorrow and pain."
"Biaki, don't!" said Promus, his hand sliding towards his own blade. Blood ran down the skin of Menkora's neck as the blade bit flesh.
"Release him!"
shouted Promus.
"Now!"
For a moment he thought the wolf would ignore his order and drive the blade up into the vault of Menkora's skull. The moment stretched. Biaki threw back his head and loosed an ululating howl that echoed mournfully throughout the gunship. He hurled the blade aside and gripped Menkaure's shoulders as though to embrace a brother. Instead, he slammed his forehead into the centre of Menkaure's face. The Thousand Suns legionary slid down the fuselage to the deck, his face a bloody mask.
"Svevni Rekulf,"
he said, pointing at the slumped warrior.
"Keep that spear of yours jammed hard against his chest. If he so much as whispers, drive it home as you would into the heart of Hrosshavalur."
Sickness that was not sickness, but something far worse, cramped Hathor Mart's belly as he lurched along the darkened corridor below the waterline of the Osiris Panthea. Spending so long beyond the black ship's protective Gellerfield had been foolish, and the flesh change was intensifying its assault on his form. He pressed a hand to his belly, feeling the skin beneath ripple with ambition to change and grow into new and ever more horrific forms. The great ocean pressed in on the ship as it hurtled onwards, following a heading of the newly empowered Araman. Hathor Mart groaned, pausing to lean against a wide bulkhead. Wanly glowing lumens stretched down the companionway, barely enough to light the symbols etched onto the shuttered doors of the prisoner holds to either side. Sweat poured from him. He let out a breath that burned his throat. His skin was fevered with the roiling motion in his cells. Toxic bile rose in his gullet. He bit back the urge to vomit and pressed on. His steps became ever more irregular as the bones shifted within the meat of his body. Dizziness swamped him as sensory inputs formed at random across his body, eyes bursting like pustules on his neck and back, taste organs formed at his fingertips and upon the soles of his feet. He tried to count the number of shuttered doors he passed, but his mind burned with pain and the effort of holding back the genetic rebellion within his flesh. He had no idea how far he'd come. Had he passed 8 or 9? Hathor Mart looked to see if he'd reached the right shutter, but gummed matter clogged his vision. He wiped the back of his hand over his eyes. It came away sticky with webbed residue. He rubbed his palm on his leg armour and exerted a measure of his Pavoni powers to gain clarity enough to examine the door. Unmarked, save for the symbology of the Silent Sisterhood.
"Yes," he said, his voice a wet, rasping slur, utterly unlike his normal, perfectly modulated tone. "This must be the tenth."
He reached for the shutter release controls, but his legs gave way beneath him. He slid down the door, feeling the curse within him revel in the weakening of his power to hold it back. Had he not been an adept of the Pavoni, he would have succumbed to its aberrant evolution long before now. Hathomart lifted an arm that was bending and cracking in unnatural ways, but the controls were too far out of reach. Acidic tears spilled down his cheeks, the skin melting beneath it all the way to bone.
"No,"
he gurgled.
"I can't die like this."
"I'm told you won't,"
said a voice behind him, as hands reached down to haul him to his feet.
"I think it still needs you."
Hathomart squinted through his blurred vision to see the armoured form of the Emperor's children swordsman. His bone-white hair and size-sculpted features looked down on him with a sardonic grin. Whether it was the fire in his brain or riot of his thoughts, he could not tell, but Hathomart thought he saw two twisting, sinuous forms within Lucius's body.
"Why are you here?"
he managed.
"I'm here to keep you alive,"
said Lucius, opening the hatch and dragging him inside. Hathomart felt his back squirm with tumorous growths, spouting like fungi. He screamed in pain, his powers useless in the face of his rapid mutations.
"Hold on," said Lucius. "All that you need is here."
Hathomart squinted through the myriad images overlaying his mind. Like the previous 9 compartments, this one was packed with at least 100 damned souls. Cowed, starving, diseased and filthy from weeks of the Thousand Suns' neglect.
"Just as it showed you, remember?"
said Lucius. Hathomart nodded, his mouth and tongue too grossly swollen and distended now to speak. Whether it was the nearness of his salvation, or some last reserve of untapped resolve, he would never know. But Hathomart found the strength to lurch towards the terrified captives. He dropped to his knees before an unmoving man whose body was malnourished to the point of being skeletal. He looked up at Hathomart with sympathy in his eyes. The mortal's pity infuriated him, and he plunged his hands into the man's stomach. Eye-tipped fingers pierced suddenly soft flesh, and, voicing the alien words Aphogomon had taught him, Hathomart pushed. The effects were instantaneous. The man convulsed as his flesh bulged and stretched. Rampant growth all but turned him inside out in a heartbeat. A rain of aerosolized blood sprayed Hathomart as he felt the treachery within him diminish. Reinvigorated, he moved on to another man, this one with enough fear-born strength to back away. Hathomart did not give him the chance, and pushed yet more of his mutations out of his body. The man expired seconds later, vomiting a great gout of blood over Hathomart. Exhilarated at his success, he crawled towards another victim. A shadow fell across him.
"No, take this one,"
said Lucius, throwing a frightened adolescent next to him.
"This one's flesh is younger and more resilient than those others."
Hathomart nodded and thrust both his hands into the weeping boy's belly. He poured mutation after mutation into him until the gibbering, mewling flesh sack was unrecognizable as having once been human.
"More," said Hathomart. "I need more."
The shutter slammed down. Once it had been a cargo hold. Now it was a charnel tomb. Nothing remained alive within. Hathomart's skin was radiant, smooth and vital. His body was that of a legionary in his prime, easily the equal of Fulgrim's warrior. The strength filling him was like his memory of his first day as a legionary, where there was not a foe in the galaxy he could not personally defeat. He took a deep breath and stretched his arms before him.
"Throne, I feel alive,"
he said. Lucius reached back and set the automatic expulsion controls on the hold. The whoosh of purging fire incinerating the hundreds of corpses within pushed the shutter outwards in its frame. A moment later, the shutter was sucked inwards as the ashen contents were vented into the void. Hathor Mart turned his hands over before him, checking for any sign that even a sliver of the flesh change was still upon him. He found nothing and grinned.
"I am beautiful again," he said.
"You are," Lucius grudgingly agreed. "But you and I both know that beauty comes at a price."
"Anything."
The swordsman let out a guttural bark of laughter.
"It said that's what you'd say," said Lucius. "Just be sure that when the time comes to pay, you don't back away from that promise. You can't escape this debt."
"Have no fear," said Hathor Mart, with a sneer of withering scorn. "Whatever its damned price, I'll pay it gladly."
Lucius stepped closer to Hathor Mart.
"That big damn book Ahriman carries around," he said.
"The Book of Magnus? What of it?" said Hathor Mart, taking a step back.
"We're going to change it," said Lucius.